Hi, good afternoon, everyone. I'm Jack Herman, the Acting Director of ASPR's National Healthcare Preparedness Program. I want to thank you all for joining us today. During today's meeting, we'll kick off with some updates from the COVID-19 Healthcare Resilience Working Group, as well as ASPR Tracy. And then we're excited to welcome our colleague, Dr. Satish Pillai, who is serving as the Operation Warp Speed Senior Liaison Officer to discuss the COVID-19 vaccine implementation. And then finally, we'll welcome John Friedenberg, who is the Information Management Team Lead for the Strategic National Stockpile. And John will share an overview of our SNS 2.0 initiative. I want to now pass it over to Matt Watson, and he will do the update on the COVID-19 Healthcare Resilience Working Group. Matt.
Thanks so much, Jack. Again, my name is Matt Watson. I am a senior advisor and hospital team lead for the COVID-19 Healthcare Resilience Working Group. I wanted just to share a few updates with you today. First, I'd like to go over our new PPE preservation toolkit. This toolkit is a planning tool to guide organizations in calculating the benefits of various PPE preservation strategies. There are two main features of the toolkit. First, it includes a guide that provides a step-by-step set of instructions for using the tool. And second, it includes the tool itself to allow users to enter, analyze, and data relating to their PPE usage, and then interpret the output. In particular, certain areas like emergency departments will clearly have different PPE needs. So this tool can be used as a systems level that can use an average or general set of data for all facilities. We hope you find that useful. Next, I'd like to share an update on efforts to bolster stockpiling of dialysis supplies and equipment. The ASPR Strategic National Stockpile, or SNS, is actively working to acquire national stopgap continuous renal replacement therapy, in addition to portable hemodialysis machines and fluids, to address acute COVID-19 ICU surge demand and to enable increased manufacturing to support continued demand of those products. Previously, ASPR supported Surge in New York City with its initial 50 dialysis machines, and it recently acquired an additional 50 machines to support state requests for local hospital needs. Finally, I'd like to provide a brief update from our CMS and CDC long-term care strike teams. As of October 9th, 8 waves of strike teams have been deployed to 76 facilities in 21 states, including 24 super hotspots. The working group created a qualitative analysis tool for federal nursing home strike teams to track and compare current issues at facilities visited, critical actions for state and local partners, and recommendations for facilities to implement. The tool showed that infection prevention and control, or ICP, program training and implementation continues to be a leading area of concern for facilities, with 48% of all ICP issues related to PPE access and use, including concerns such as lack of PPE training and N95 fit testing. The working group is coordinating closely with CDC and CMS to identify areas of opportunity to support nursing homes with PPE training, including a recently launched resource and recommendation template to improve the consistency and accuracy of the recommendations strike teams give to facilities. I'm now happy to pass it over to my colleague, Shane Brannaman, to share updates from ASPR Tracy. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you so much, Matt, and good afternoon, Hospital Association shipmates. I hope everyone is continuing to take care of themselves while they're in service to others, and thank you for what you do daily. Next slide. I'm just going to spend a couple minutes. One, as you heard last time we were on this call together, ASPR Tracy recently celebrated its 5th anniversary birthday, and I just wanted to give you a few metrics as far as what Asper Tracy's been doing. Just for a frame of reference, we had in the month of September, we had over 550 technical assistance visits that we processed, in addition to doing a number of other activities. And as you can see on the chart on the left, about 25% of total TA that Tracy has done since its inception has now been devoted to COVID-19 response. And we provide this information update on a monthly basis, and if something on this slide is of keen interest to you, but I do want to gravitate your attention to the big purple bubble all the way on the right-hand side, because several of you on this call today are included in our subject matter expert cadre. We started out with about 40 people when we first started Asper Tracy 5 years ago, and now have 950 SME cadre that help us with a wide variety of issues, including COVID-19. So I just want to, this success story for Asper Tracy is attributed in large part to partnerships that we have with folks like you, and I just wanted to acknowledge and tell you how much we appreciate and need your support on a daily basis. So thank you very much. Next slide. Again, I just want to let you kind of browse through this. You'll be provided this PowerPoint, but these are some of the select new resources. Some of it coincides with what Matt was talking about of what we've added to Asper Tracy. And then certainly, as you know, because you're on our distribution list, we are very busy with a large array of different webinars, depending upon what piques your interest. But we are currently collaborating with the Pediatric Centers of Excellence here at Asper on a webinar series. And again, we have another webinar coming up tomorrow, and then two more after that. So again, if any of those are of interest to you, and Jack highlighted the optimizing of the healthcare PPE webinar last time. So I just want to make sure that you know that we are continually, almost daily, updating different resources on Asper Tracy, adding different from a wide variety of individuals and organizations with new resources. So please come back often to Asper Tracy, because we're continually updating that. And then we do let you know through our outreaches with the Expresses about what we're doing as well, and drawing your attention to new resources. But lastly, we're here for you. If you can't find the resources that you need, simply email, call, or do an online form, and we'll make sure that we address your needs in an expeditious manner. And again, we take care of a wide array of different issues for healthcare system preparedness, response, and recovery. So please reach out to us. Now, my distinct pleasure to introduce Captain Satish Pai, who is, again, the going to provide an update on the COVID-19 vaccine implementation. And Captain Pillai is our CDC colleague that is the senior LNO for Operation Warp Speed. Captain Pillai, over to you, sir.
Thank you, Shane, and thank you to Jack for the invitation. It's a real pleasure to speak with the State Hospital Association group and give you an update on current vaccine implementation activities. As Shane pointed out, I'm the CDC's liaison officer to Operation Warp Speed, and in that role, I help facilitate communication between our DoD colleagues at OWS with our subject matter experts in Atlanta, and also engage with coordination with our colleagues across the interagency, including Jack and the HPP program, Asper writ large, and other federal partners. Next slide, please. So what I'd like to do is just briefly kind of go through where we are currently in the distribution and administration mission for the COVID vaccine planning. As you know, this is a very complex situation right now, with multiple different vaccine products currently in various phases of clinical trial. There are multiple different cold chain requirements for some of these vaccines, varying requirements for dose administration, with one being a single dose vaccine currently in trial, the rest being two dose vaccines. The overarching goal, though, is that we want to have a rapid, efficient, and high uptake of the vaccine series once a vaccine product receives FDA emergency use authorization and we get guidance from the advisory committee on immunization practices on the appropriate target populations for which these vaccines will be utilized. While this graphic depicts something that looks sequential for planning purposes, OWS staff, interagency partners are working on every one of these pieces at the same time. And as we think about vaccine implementation, we have to keep in mind, like starting at the left of this, prioritizing populations, recognizing that allocation of vaccine, especially in the early phases when there may be limited supplies, will be challenging. There will be special consideration needed for groups who may need a very tailored approach, such as healthcare workers or those potentially living in long-term care facilities. And decisions on these prioritization and allocation will have to be made in real time as more information comes available. Irrespective of the fluid nature of a lot of this information, vaccine safety is the most important issue for every phase, from the clinical trials all the way through the administration and subsequent monitoring. And data systems are being established or invigorated to ensure that we have real-time monitoring of not just the vaccine supply and uptake, but also being able to track safety signals. And overlaying all of this is the importance of communications and stakeholder engagement such as this, because at the end of the day, we have to engage with lots of different people to help one be part of the planning as well as the operationalization of this. We can have a robust set of prioritization, allocation, distribution plans, setting up administration sites. But if we don't have sufficient communications and partner engagement, this will not succeed. On the note of communications, I would point out that just yesterday, CDC created and added to the COVID general COVID preparedness information on our website with dedicated pages to vaccine activities, as well as frequently asked questions. And as you can anticipate, that section will continue to grow as we gain more information about the vaccines, as well as once authorization occurs. Next slide, please. So successful implementation of the COVID vaccine campaign is going to occur through a multi-phase approach, and different strategies are going to be required to ensure appropriate coverage as more and more doses become available. As I alluded to earlier, what we're hearing from our OWS colleagues is the first rounds of doses will be available in November to December timeframe. And that is where our planning assumptions currently are, including the plans that we've asked our jurisdictional colleagues at the state, local, and territorial level to plan against. But in those early months, we anticipate there will be a limited amount of vaccine available. And during that phase one, we are anticipating concentrating efforts on critical populations and ensuring that we have the ability to manage the inventory distribution and dose administration very closely to ensure end-to-end visibility on these limited doses of vaccine. As you can see in the graphic, that to account for that, we will probably use closed settings such as mass vaccination sites or places of work to be able to provide vaccine for this targeted populations in and account for vaccine the the entirety of the vaccine that's being pushed out. During phase two, as vaccine doses continue to increase and multiple products are available, we anticipate that supply will be likely to meet demand. And at that point, the focus will shift to ensuring coverage of all critical populations and ensuring particularly high uptake in highly vulnerable populations, such as those that are higher risk for severe outcomes with COVID-19. And with this broader catchment, we anticipate jurisdictions would continue to expand their vaccine provider pool to account for the need to have more and more sites to administer vaccine at. During this expansion, we anticipate commercial and private sector partners, including pharmacies, doctor's offices, clinics, as well as the public health side with federally qualified health centers, rural health clinics, and other temporary sites may be required. And then as we continue on this graphic, you'll see that at a certain point when there will be likely sufficient supply for the entire population, and the goals will be to really identify those locations where we've had incredibly hard, or difficult challenges in reaching difficult to reach populations, just to make sure that we are maximally covering the U.S. population with the COVID-19 vaccine. Next slide, please. So again, another cartoon just to kind of go over the general distribution overview. And the key concepts are it requires partnerships with state, local, tribal, territorial health departments and federal partners to allocate and distribute vaccine. And there will be augmenting of this system through direct distribution to commercial partners when we have sufficient vaccine and we have populations that the commercial partners can clearly help us meet the gap with. CDC has a centralized distributor, which is that will allow us to ensure that we have a flexible, scalable, secure way of tracking orders, allocation, uptake, and management. And that, but there may be individual vaccine products which have their direct shipment from the manufacturer to the distributor to the administration sites. As you can see in this graphic, from the manufacturer, there'll be a distributor. There may be additional depots, but the goal is to ensure that we have a breadth of administration sites that we can utilize to get the broadest coverage with the COVID-19 vaccine, initially recognizing that there may be targeted mass vaccine clinics when there are limited amounts of doses or very target occupational vaccine clinics. Next slide, please. This slide simply tries to outline a draft concept of operation for select critical populations. As I said, in the initial phases when there may be limited doses of vaccine, it's important to think through where allocation may need to be directed towards. Both the National Academies of Science, Engineering, and Medicine, as well as CDC's Federal Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, ACIP, have worked towards determining these populations of focus and ensure equity and access to COVID-19 vaccine. The key concepts are, we want to be able to use the COVID-19 epidemiology and burden, as well as factor in issues such as vaccine safety, efficacy, the quality of the data, in thinking through how to prioritize populations. And this chart is notional because we still don't have the final ACIP recommendations, and it's not meant to be inclusive, but to highlight how subject matter experts are thinking through the critical populations. When there is very limited doses, it may be important to target healthcare personnel and other essential workers, such as utilizing locations such as occupational health clinics and other settings where we can drive these focus groups towards product. We also want to think about people that may be at increased risk for severe disease, as we've seen earlier in this pandemic with significant morbidity and mortality in individuals residing in long-term care facilities, as well as those who may be at increased risk for COVID-19 infection based on their race or ethnicity and based on other unique demographic or socioeconomic risk factors. And then we also want to make sure that we're thinking about equity and ensuring that those with currently that may have challenges with access to vaccine, such as those living in rural jurisdictions or with disabilities, we are accounting for and factoring those populations into our overall prioritization schema. Next slide, please. Given the limited time, I don't want to take, I want to get through all the slides. I will just simply say that the safety focus for COVID-19 vaccine is a stem to stern approach from the development of these vaccines through the entire life cycle to the administration and post-administration follow-up. And the goal is to use established mechanisms and partnerships with health systems, academic centers, private sector partners. CDC plans to leverage existing safety systems such as VAERS, the Vaccine Safety Data Link. And there will be, we will also be looking at developing new platforms such as smartphone text messaging systems to be able to track and have vaccine recipients be able to monitor for unexpected adverse events and allow for timely follow-up if recipients report adverse events. Next slide, please. As I said on the very first slide, irrespective of the best distribution plan, the optimal vaccine candidate, and all the safety monitoring systems being in place, in the absence of an effective communication strategy, this endeavor will have significant challenges. And to that end, CDC is leveraging the Vaccinate with Confidence framework, which has been successfully used to strengthen public trust in vaccines in other vaccine preventable disease outbreaks for the COVID-19 scenario. The key concepts are to be able to reinforce trust with real-time information as we have available about COVID-19 and COVID-19 vaccine. We want to be able to empower the healthcare community, recognizing that this is happening at a very fast pace and information is continuing to evolve. And we want our healthcare providers to be able to speak to their patients and speak to the populations they serve with trusted information on the disease and the use of vaccine. And finally, recognizing that we have to engage with communities and community thought leaders to help strengthen the message and really leverage the fact that people will be more prone to listen to the advice and guidance from their trusted members of their community. So again, reinforcing information on what is available to the public writ large, what we're providing to healthcare providers, and ensuring we're appropriately engaging with communities. Next slide, please. In summary, I think this is clearly a complicated landscape, multiple products, multiple dosing schemes, multiple cold chain requirements, occurring in a very accelerated time frame, but one that will, only proceed to administration once there's authorization by the FDA and guidance from the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, and that we, CDC and FDA and interagency partners will deploy routine procedures and systems to ensure that vaccines are safe and effective. The recommendations on who will get vaccinated will evolve over time as we move from limited doses in the late part of 2020 into increasing supplies later in 2021, and recognize that vaccine planning is continuing to evolve. New information is continuing to be obtained, and with increasing information, the hope is that using forums such as these, the updated CDC website, and ongoing stakeholder engagement, we're able to provide the most up-to-date information to those that would benefit from it. I'll stop there, turn it back to Shelley and Jack, and thank you very much for the time.
Thank you, Dr. Pillai. We'll have a few minutes now for some question and answer for Dr. Pillai on the vaccine implementation. So as a reminder, if you want to submit written questions or comments, you can use the chat function, or you can ask a question live by selecting the raise hand feature in the participant tab. We'll open the line for questions now.
While we have folks queuing up for questions, hopefully there are some, let me just ask of our State Hospital Association representatives, what are some of the challenges you may be hearing or expecting, anticipating in regards to the mass vaccine campaign, if you will, execution strategy that you have been hearing from some of your own members and affiliates? It would be helpful to know what's the word out on the street. Where are the concerns in the field? Because I think it's important for Satish and his colleagues at CDC and OWS to have some good situational awareness of what's being talked about out there to help drive better communication or just any communication and ways that we can attend to some of the concerns and issues that the field is anticipating. And also whether or not you feel like you've been involved both at the State Hospital Association and your partners and members have been involved in the vaccine planning to date. As you know, the micro plans are due today. And so it's interesting, it would be interesting for us to hear to what extent you are involved in informing those plans, not involved in forming those plans, any issues that came up that are particular to your state that you think are important to have on our radar?
Yeah, thanks, Jack. Yeah, I just to echo Jack's points, the 64 jurisdictions, their plans are, they'll be due back to CDC tomorrow, COB, and as many of you have probably seen, the goal was to engage with the key stakeholders within their communities that could help enumerate key populations that would be target of vaccine early phases, later phases, as well as thinking through what would be appropriate vaccination locations to help maximize the coverage. And thinking through also unique cold chain capabilities. So there's probably been outreach, and hopefully there has been thinking through minus 20, minus 80 freezer capacity in within the hospitals in your jurisdictions. So hopefully those conversations have been fruitful with your immunization and emergency management partners at the health department, and would be curious to hear what your perspectives have been. Over.
Yeah, I'm a bit surprised we haven't received any questions, because I've certainly spoken to some folks individually, and we've heard through the grapevine that there's a need for more information or concerns about to what extent state hospital associations have been drawn into the planning effort. So this is one of those opportunities to kind of share now where you think some of the concerns are, where some of the questions may still be.
And if there are, was that a question? If not, I'm happy to also, Jack, take back to the jurisdictional planning team, having an eye towards ensuring that the hospital systems have been engaged, and making sure that feedback is provided to the jurisdictions. I know that there's been a call for, as I said, the freezer capacity. Some of this is most likely going to be in major hospitals within the jurisdictions. So I suspect that if there hasn't been outreach, there will be. Again, these plans will be reviewed, feedback will be provided back to the jurisdiction. So there will be an opportunity, if you haven't engaged with your appropriate immunizations lead within the health department or emergency management lead within the health department, to engage with them and ensure that communication is established, so that any feedback can be incorporated into the plans. Over.
Thanks, Satish. We did have one comment in the chat box. It would be helpful to for states to be encouraged to involve hospital associations in planning. Let's be clear, they have been encouraged to include hospital associations in planning. So if you've not been in contact with the state health department, or you haven't heard from them, that's exactly what we're trying to hear and ascertain, because the state has a responsibility to reach out to the healthcare sector where we know a vaccine is going to need to be either distributed to as a population, or they're going to be instrumental in helping dispense the vaccine to the population within their state or jurisdiction. So we want to make sure that the healthcare sector is informing this plan that the state is responsible for executing. And if you've not been part of the planning process to date, and you aren't up to speed on what your role or responsibility or accountability may be, that's exactly what we want to hear.
I see Alyssa's, Alyssa just responded. I think it is, like, as with anything, there will be some states that are more proactive than others. And I think I think it's safe to say if you haven't heard, it would be a good idea to reach back to the immunizations department. I can also have my colleagues back in Atlanta mention this on the all awardee calls, that, thinking about the breadth of partners that can help operationalize this large endeavor. But thank you, Alyssa, for the comment.
Yeah, we'll continue to do our best to bring these opportunities to you as well. But given the plans, as Satish said, are due tomorrow, if you've not heard from your state, then it is likely either the plan was submitted without your input, or you're in the plan and may not know it. All of these things happen for a variety of reasons, and this is not to be punitive. This is really just to anticipate. This is going to be one of the major vaccination efforts of our lifetime, and we all want to be on the same page. So this is all in the spirit of identifying potential gaps and challenges and just making sure that this can come off in as seamless a way as possible.
And I do have one other comment, Jack. It's interesting. Like, you know, as I said, there's probably challenges on all sides, given the number of potential partners and the rapidity with which this is proceeding. So on the state planning side, some of the concerns were that provider agreements were going directly to hospital associations and bypassing the health departments, and it might lead to numerous like double counting essentially, or the state losing visibility on who is trying to sign up. And so I think it's just a matter of all of us trying to stay in communication as best as possible. You know, the provider agreements, the state should be reaching out to you all to help as well as, you know, the medical associations and pharmacy associations within the jurisdiction, and vice versa. You know, they should, be keeping you all in the loop on what's going on with the overall vaccine planning. And however I can help from my position right now at OWS, and linking back to CDC headquarters, as well as engaging with Jack, you know, who's a critical partner in the healthcare sector, you know, please just feel free to let me know. Thanks again.
Thank you, Dr. Pillay. We're going to move to the next portion of our agenda, and welcome John Friedenberg to share a little bit about the SNS 2.0. If you do have any follow-up questions from the last segment, please feel free to continue to enter those in the chat box. Hand it over to you, John.
Thanks. Thanks very much, Shelley, and thank you for allowing me the opportunity to come and talk to you today a little bit about SNS 2.0. My name is John Friedenberg. I've been with the Strategic National Stockpile since 2004 in a variety of different roles. I have done pretty much every response that we've been involved in, from very small to now very large, across not only the United States, but also internationally. I've written a lot of the response plans, so I know how things work in the program. And I offer that because the thing that I'm going to talk to you about now is something that has truly been unprecedented. And I heard a couple of the key words that Satish used, like rapidity and once in our lifetime, like what Jack did, and what this project that I'm going to describe to you is about really has a lot of those kinds of words associated with it. As a lot of you probably know, at the start of this response, the inventory in the SNS was largely based on material that we had procured back for the not for the 2009 pandemic, but in that era. And that's kind of the start point that we had for this pandemic. And the speed with which this took off, and the very, very rapid rise in demand, it quickly made it apparent that we needed to look at the stockpile a little bit different. And in the past, how we have really operated is that we would provide material that, and then once the event had subsided, we would go through a very deliberate procurement and acquisition process to restock or redesign the approach and the material that we would hold in the stockpile for specific event or scenario. With the SNS 2.0 project, the goal was to, while we were still in a response, to rapidly expand and build a capability for an anticipated next wave or next large demand spike on the system. And so that was the going in position that we had for, that laid kind of the foundation for what we set out to do, really starting in about March, April, while we were still responding. If any of you have ever done that, you know how challenging that is, that you're dealing with a particular problem, and at the same time, you have to carve out enough space to build while you're responding. And we've been doing that pretty much nonstop since February. We started with quarantine stations, for those of you who remember that phase of the operation, and we are still to this day sending material out across the country in response to requests for a variety of different products. So 2.0 was a concept that was designed, and it was chaired by very, very senior members of the government to lend not only the appropriate emphasis, but the ability to draw rapidly on capabilities that the SNS organically doesn't have and would need to do this kind of work. One example of that I'll talk about in a second is contracting. SNS and ASPR have a capability for contracting, but not to the scale that we needed to do this kind of a rapid build. And so we relied very heavily on partners from the Defense Logistics Agency, who had more of that than we did, to come together and really form a very cohesive and effective team, quite literally overnight. There's five work streams that came out of the initial concept design of 2.0, and I'm going to briefly walk through each one of those. The first one was replenish the SNS. As I mentioned, we had to draw on expertise from the Defense Logistics Agency and others like FEMA to bring together the right expertise to rapidly produce contracts that would allow us to procure material on a very, very large scale. And I'll give you some numbers at the end to give you an idea of what that is. So to do that, it was not something that could be done by just SNS or just ASPR or just part of or just one part of an organization. It really involved a lot of different agencies coming together and producing a final solution. The one example of the numbers, and again, I'll give you more in a minute, but we started the pandemic with an inventory of approximately 19,000 ventilators. The way we design our inventory is to be multi-event. So we had them that were able to be used for a pandemic, but for also for some of the other bio events that we have, planned in our scenarios against. But we started with about 19,000. We sent probably about roughly 10 or 11,000 out in the course of the response. And to give you an idea of the scale of the 2.0 capability, we now hold an inventory right at 160,000 ventilators. So when you're talking those kind of numbers and that kind of scale, there's not only the pure numbers of doing the procurements and then buying the machines in a reasonable amount of time. SNS also had to grow warehousing, and it had to look at other aspects so that we could be more efficient in our distribution. But one of the cornerstones of the SNS 2.0 work was that we would have a larger capability of initially PPE, but we also added pharmaceuticals to that that we didn't have currently in our inventory, so that we would have roughly a 90 days worth of supply against the demand that was provided to us. So that was the initial goal. We're not there yet, but that's to give you an idea of the kind of the numbers when you talk about replenishing the SNS. The second work stream was working on distribution. And our network, while it is very capable and national and can push a lot of product out, was I really designed for a bioterror event, which was centered around a or multiple cities, but it was a kind of a focused event, and it was not national to the scale that we had to deal with during this particular response. So one of the areas that we knew we had to look at alternatives for was working with distributors who do this kind of national response on a day-to-day basis and tap into some of that capability to augment what we had organically in the stockpile. Through the course of the last couple months, we've entered into contracts and placed product with distributors so that we're much more nimble and able to respond more quickly to requests and other demand indicators like hotspots that we we service now with people who do this every day to the places we're trying to go. And so we think that the work that we've done on the distribution side has been, it's been in the in our background or in our minds for a while, but now this has been an opportunity for us to really implement some of the ideas and put product in places that it may be more efficient for a response like this. The next one was refining the strategy and structure of the SNS. As you can imagine, as we started to grow and gain more capability in warehousing and product, really we are very much understaffed. And while we have not grown yet, there is design to better resource the types of things we're being asked to do now, not only in terms of some of the things that I've talked about, but Satish mentioned another one of our kind of portfolio items, and that's cold storage. We have gotten a lot of product in now that requires significant cold storage, and is one area that while we had a significant capability before, the numbers that we are now talking about is much greater than what we had capacity for. And each one of those new capabilities that we desire requires a really thoughtful approach to the most efficient way to do it. The fourth one is expanding domestic manufacturing. There's been a recognition and a lot more emphasis placed on supply chain analysis, which is really what my background is and what I did for about 5 years leading up to the response, that there are certain areas that were very vulnerable to the place where material is either manufactured or sourced from. And so there has been a significant investment placed in areas that will make us less vulnerable going forward, either in terms of manufacturing capacity based in the United States or sub-tier suppliers that are now in the U.S. or a majority is in the U.S. where before it was overseas. And part of that vulnerability analysis is an important new feature to what we are really doing holistically, not just the SNS, but ASPR, FEMA, and others at large that are really looking at the problem a little bit more thoroughly and not just putting things in the stockpile, but really being thoughtful about how we do it, where it's sourced, and then how what's the best way to distribute it. And the environment right now is such that it allows for a lot of those ideas to really take a lot of have a lot of fruition or bear fruit where they have been out there for a while, but we have not really had some of the resourcing. So we are trying to take advantage of that window of opportunity right now and implement some of those things that we've kind of had in the back, we've had in our minds for a while. And I just look down and I know I'm at my time right now, but I have one more of the five, and that's, I saved the best for last, and that's the one that I'm kind of a co-lead on at the moment, and that's something called the Supply Chain Control Tower. One of the things that we have been very aggressive on and fortunate to be able to work again with some world-class people is gaining as much information on the data side as we can to make more informed decisions. So we collect data now from major distributors, hospital supply through teletracking, long-term care through NHSN, and there's a system in place now in ASPR called HHS Protect that aggregates a lot of that data, and we're up in the neighborhood of about 120, I believe, at last count, data individual and unique data streams that come in at various frequencies and provide different sorts of data. But that is a tremendous leap forward from where we were at the start of the response, where we now have significant data to be able to analyze things like supply and demand, where we just did not have that ability before. And so I'll close there. This is a topic area that I could talk about for hours. That's why I didn't put up slides, because I knew I wouldn't get through them all. But if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them right now. Thank you.
Thank you, John. And again, if anyone has any questions, you can add them to the chat box, or you can raise your hand and we will call on you. All right, I'm not seeing any questions or comments in the chat box, nor any raised hands. So just want to give one last call out, just in case someone has been waiting their turn and wants to speak or add their comment. Otherwise, we'll move ahead and close out the call.
Okay, Shelley, I don't think we have any questions. All right, so thank you to all of our presenters today. Hopefully the information that was provided to you was useful. And as all the presenters have shared, if you have specific questions that you would like to reach out separate from this call, please do not hesitate to do so. Also, as a reminder, if you'd like your hospitals association to be highlighted in a future call, or on ASPR's website or social media accounts, please contact your field project officer or send a message to us here at ASPR headquarters at hbp@hhs.gov. We thank you again for taking time with us today and look forward to speaking with you during next month's call. Take care, everyone.